It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Let's start the show with the quote of the day. I can't imagine a person becoming a success who doesn't give this game of life everything he's got. And that is by the late, great Walter Cronkite. Walter Cronkite, at one point, the most trusted man in America. Anyway, today's show with Elaine Pofelt. Elaine is an independent journalist who specializes in small business, entrepreneurship, and careers. She is the author of the best-selling book, The Multi-Million Dollar One-Person Business, a look at how entrepreneurs are hitting seven-figure revenue in businesses where they're the only employee. Her work has appeared in Fortune, Money, CNBC, Inc. magazine, Forbes, Crain's New York Business, and many other business publications. She is a contributor to the Economist Intelligence Unit. She is also a ghostwriter. Elaine Pofelt, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you so much, Bert. It's an honor to be here, and I love your opening quote.
You know what? I just thought, I love Walter Cronkite, and I was not aware that he had attributed to that quote. So I just thought I'd run with it. I really enjoy it.
Oh, it's awesome, and it applies just as equally to entrepreneurship as it does to journalism.
It does.
Wonderful choice.
Yeah, I mean, as he says, to this game of life. So whatever your game is, you know, you got to give it your all. So, no, I thought it was a great quote, and, I'm glad that we found that. All right, so let's start off by this. Tell us about your new book, The Million Dollar One-Person Business, and why did you decide to write it?
The book, The Million Dollar One-Person Business, looks at an exciting trend that's been taking place the past few years, the growth of businesses that have no employees but are getting to $1 million in revenue or more. And I came across the trend almost by accident. I write a blog for Forbes, and I was looking for ideas and started surfing the internet for interesting data. And I came across these seemingly boring statistics at the Census Bureau for non-employer businesses. Those are those that have no employees other than the owner. And what I found out was that they had grown by 33% between 2011 and 2015. And I'm a solo business. I'm very recently hired employees, but I have been solo for many years. And I know a lot of freelancers. And I thought, they're not getting to 1 million. What are these people doing? So I started slicing and dicing the data. And I was able to find out what industries they are in. And they were in a whole variety of industries, retail, manufacturing, e-commerce, professional services, and more. So it wasn't just the industries that they were in that was distinguishing them. As I probed into it, I found that it was actually the way that they were running their businesses. So I wrote a blog post about some of the businesses I found for Forbes, and it went viral. It had more page views than any piece I can imagine writing in the past few years. It had over 300,000 page views, and people were saying, we want to know more about this. What exactly are they doing? How is how they run their business different from how I run my business? So that led to several years of coverage of these entrepreneurs, and eventually a literary agent saw the post, and she thought there was material there for a book. So I delved into it even deeper, and I wound up writing The Million Dollar One-Person Business, which came out in January.
Oh, I love it. I love it. All right, and the book, again, is the Million Dollar One-Person Business. And it's available on Amazon or wherever you like to buy your favorite books. All right, so let's talk about this. What are more one-person businesses and partnerships? Why do you think more one-person businesses and partnerships are hitting the $1 million sales mark now versus the past?
In a word, Bert, it's technology. What has changed is that we have so many technologies that can extend what one person can do without hiring employees. So, for instance, in marketing, think about the power of Facebook ads, right? They're inexpensive.
Right.
Anybody can afford to take out a Facebook ad. You could reach millions of people without a whole marketing team. All you need to do is figure it out yourself and pay for it, right? There are technologies for your accounting to keep your accounting data organized that you might still need an accountant, you might need a bookkeeper, but they can save you hours of time on things like invoicing, record keeping, et cetera. This extends through every area of the business. And what I found with a lot of the entrepreneurs who are getting to seven figures is that they're using multiple automation tools to extend what they can do so that they're not wasting a lot of time on minutia, and they can think like a CEO about their business and focus on the big picture. And they do that quite well. The other trends are the rise of freelancing and outsourced services. What I saw was, although these are one-person businesses in terms of how the Census Bureau classifies them and how they pay their taxes, they do have a team, and the team is often made up of freelancers and contractors. So that's one way that they can do more. Another way is using outsourced services. So if they have an e-commerce store, instead of packing up every single box themselves, they go to an expert, Amazon, and use fulfillment by Amazon. Some of the companies use back office services. So Harry Ein, who sells swag, those pens with the bank's name on them or T-shirts and that sort of thing, from his garage. He brings in $4 million in annual revenue in a one-man business in California. And the way he is able to do that is he uses I Promote You, which is a service that handles his invoicing and all this sort of office stuff that would otherwise take up a lot of his time, but isn't really the best use of his time. And that's enabled him to grow. And as he has grown the business, he uses more of that service. So he's been able to scale up his use of help in conjunction with his scaling of his revenue.
I love that. Okay.
They're the three main trends. And I think that it's very encouraging for all of us, because as we see what these entrepreneurs are doing, there are so many ideas that no matter what our industry, we can apply to our own business.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Because sometimes we as small business operators, we don't do enough research. What I mean by that is let's say, what was the outsource company you just mentioned?
It's called I Promote You, and that's unique
I promote
to his
you.
Industry. It's a swag back office operation, but there are services like that in all different industries, not just for swag sellers.
Sure. So as a small business operator, if we haven't heard of one of those services, we don't look for one of those services. So right there. Like you said, there, I Promote You is specific to the swag and promotion industry, but there's an outsourced service like that. I know there's a service like that for the supplement industry, and there's one for the health club industry. And so my point being is sometimes it's worth doing the research and reaching out to your peer groups and your network to find out, I'm trying to automate this thing in my business. Does anybody know how to get it done? And all of a sudden, you get introduced to possible ways of automating or outsourcing that chunk of your business.
Absolutely. And I think that the entrepreneurs in the book in general were very good connectors with other people. Although they were solo entrepreneurs, they were very good about reaching out to people, maybe on an online forum, at a meetup, to find out the type of information they needed to grow their business. So that's one message I really took away from doing all of the interviews. There were more than 30 entrepreneurs in the book who I interviewed, plus probably another 20 all told that I've interviewed either before the book or afterward who are in this category of business, and they were not people who were isolated. Even though they had a one-person business, it was not like they were locked away in their garret just working at their laptop all the time. They were really good connectors and good researchers, as you pointed out.
All right, so let me ask you this. You mentioned that when you're doing your research, it seemed like the one-person business was across all different categories, more or less. I mean, it wasn't. In other words, it wasn't. What do you call it? Just in one or two areas, right?
It wasn't confined to one or two areas. I would say there were six major groups that were accessible to the average person. And by that, I mean, there is a category of businesses with over $5 million in revenue, but it was made up mostly of businesses like hedge funds or people that were professional, successful actors and actresses. Those are things that are not that attainable for the average person because either they require a lot of training, you know, in a very niche area, like hedge funds or acting. It depends somewhat on talent, you know, which maybe
right.
people have talent, but they haven't realized it yet. So I looked at the categories that the average working person could think about entering. One of the big ones, and it's the area where I see the highest revenue right now, is e-commerce. There are a lot of people doing really well with Amazon stores or stores that are freestanding and not on Amazon, in part because of the advertising trends that exist. And if they are on a big platform like Amazon, that instantly enables them to reach a very big audience. And you have the fulfillment services, so they can actually keep up with demand as long as they have the cash flow. So that's a big one. Informational content creation and marketing is another big one. So you'll see people who sometimes in conjunction with another business do things like webinars, courses on a platform like Teachable. They might do in-person courses that then have some sort of a component like an ebook. That's a booming area. Professional services is sort of an obvious one. There are highly paid professionals who might work at a big accounting firm and go out and put out a shingle, and they can command high rates, or an attorney or someone like that. There are personal services, so people like fitness professionals, a nutritionist, someone along those lines who builds a business. Sometimes they're very good at the informational content creation area too, so they might have a program, you know, for getting fit or something like that that they sell online. Real
right.
estate is another one that's really interesting. That's one many people can do on the side. There's one entrepreneur in the book, Corey Binsfield, who is a financial planner. He lives in Duluth, Minnesota, and he many years ago bought his first property, a duplex, and then from that he reinvested the rent in buying more properties. Now he has 116 properties, and he's a fun guy. He loves to skateboard, so he skateboards around his community looking for real estate deals, and he's built up this nice portfolio that is his million-dollar business. And then finally, this one is really interesting to me because it's sort of a newer one, is manufacturing. You're now
really?
Able to – yeah, absolutely. You can run a pretty substantial-sized manufacturing firm, especially in the food area, by using what's known as a co-packer. This is a factory that packages it correctly so that you won't get sick. You know, the customers won't get sick
right.
if you're making a food product. The labels are on right so that it can be sold in a store. I recently interviewed a woman for Forbes who started a company that sells nutritional bars for lactating moms. She's a nurse, a NICU nurse, and she had a volunteer group where she was helping the new moms, and she created a product, used a co-packer, and now that product is in Walmart. And, you know, she had never had any business experience, a mother of three operating from her home, but the resources are there for her to now be a manufacturer. So I thought it was awesome just to see what one person can accomplish, because we're really breaking through barriers that existed for many years thanks to a lot of the digital tools that are out there. There's a site called Makers Row that you can use to find all the different possible people and help that you might need to become a manufacturer. So that didn't exist 15 or 20 years ago. We had no access, so you had to have a whole big factory of your own to do these things. Now you don't have to.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so if I understand you correctly, what you see these people doing is they're outsourcing as much as they can. You mentioned, you know, the co-packing example, and then of course the swag example. They're using automation as much as possible. And of course, they have, you know, virtual teams that are helping them fulfill different things. Anything else?
I do think they take a little bit of distance from the business that I don't see everyday entrepreneurs doing. They're very good about protecting their time and making sure that they are really focusing on strategy, for instance, and the higher value activities like meeting with enterprise clients and not getting lost in the weeds. So I did notice that there was a greater tendency as the business got rolling and they had some money coming in to hire coaches to go to high-end retreats with other entrepreneurs so that they could surround themselves with successful people and learn from them. Early on, I found they would do it on more of a low budget. So it might be that they went to a meetup and met other entrepreneurs and exchange ideas that way. So this isn't exclusively confined to the people that have gotten to 1 million. But as they reach certain milestones that they couldn't get past, they would recognize the need for help. And I saw
right.
that there's a whole chapter where it's called Keep Getting Smarter, where they were very candid about their roadblocks. You know, maybe they got to 500,000 in revenue and they just didn't know how to get past that as one person, and they didn't have the budget yet to hire someone. By the way, I should mention, I'm not against hiring employees. Sometimes people think that I am. And when I was fact checking the book, some of them said, you know, Elaine, I'm so sorry, I hired an employee. And I meanwhile was congratulating them because I think that's awesome if you hire them when you can afford it. But what happens a lot of in small businesses is people feel they have to staff up right away. They don't understand the cash flow realities of making payroll and paying all the taxes and all that stuff that goes into it. And then they wind up falling behind and they can't keep the business going. So it's much healthier if you wait, go as far as you can with contractors, freelancers, outsourced services. And then when you really can't go any further and you really have the revenues going, that's when you say, okay, I'm going to hire somebody and put them on payroll. And at that point, it's very healthy for the business. Not everybody wants to go to that point. Some people love having a great little boutique business that brings in enough revenue to cover the things that cause people stress in life, like health insurance, having a cash reserve in case your work dries up, which can happen. You don't get unemployment as a free agent, so you need to think
right.
about these things. What, you know, if you have to send children to college, that's extremely expensive these days. There's so many expenses that are just astronomical right now. So if you can get to 1 million, maybe you're taking home when all is said and done after taxes are paid and expenses are paid, 200,000 to 400,000. You're not living like a king, but you're able to deal with all those expenses without stress. And maybe at that point you reinvest in the business too, and you decide to scale up or you don't. But this way you have options. If you're running a great little business, you have choices that are not available to you when you're in that scrambling stage that so many one-person businesses get stuck in.
Absolutely. And you know what? You start running a business that's doing well, and you mentioned a couple of the great options that you can do with them, but sometimes people tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, I'd like to buy it. And all of a sudden, you know, they drop a good chunk of money in your lap. I had a client of mine who, interestingly enough, had an e-commerce business, and they paid him $15 million for that business, and he was a one-man business. Yeah.
That's awesome. It sounds like
yeah.
I should be interviewing him. Well, it's not uncommon,
Bert,
and that's where actually having a few employees in place at that stage when you're marketing a business, if you are, it sounds like this landed in his lap more, but in one case, Dan Fajella, who ran an e-commerce business called Science of Skill, it was basically a martial arts hub online. It sold courses, it sold martial arts equipment. And he knew he wanted to sell it because he wanted to start a business involved in artificial intelligence, and this was his way of funding it. He's a martial arts teacher, by the way. So when he was marketing it, he wanted to make it clear that someone could run it even if they were not a martial arts teacher. And And so he brought in a full-time employee to run it day to day. And he also brought in a part-time employee, and he stepped away from the business, and it was ultimately purchased for over $1 million by a group of software entrepreneurs who are now still running it. And he's gone on and started his next business. But it was by showing that someone else could run it that he was able to gain their confidence in buying it. Because you can only imagine, you know, it's so specialized that if you might feel like, oh, I can't buy that. Until you could see that it was actually being run by someone who did not have that specialized knowledge either.
Yeah, no, and you know what? That's a very, very interesting point to bring up, because a lot of small businesses can only be run by the individual who started that business. But if you're able to show that you have the systems in place, that anybody can run it, it becomes much more attractive, you know, by 10x.
Absolutely. It was funny that you say that, Bert, because I've been having some panel discussions with some of the entrepreneurs from the book and some who I've covered since writing the book, who I met more recently. And that was one thing I noticed. I had a panel of five entrepreneurs in April at WeWork Soho in Soho West in New York City. And Colin Raja, who runs a business called Rim Sports with his wife, Angie, it's an e-commerce store that sells CrossFit and boxing gear aimed at women in colors that women will like. And it's branched out into some other areas as well. But that was what he talked about quite a bit, was documenting exactly how he does things so that they could things and hand them off. And initially, Angie was very candid. And she said, I'm a perfectionist. I just couldn't stand the thought of handing off any work to anyone. I just felt like I was the only person who could do customer service. I was the only person who could do all of the jobs. But they realized that they were working 24/7, and it was really a season of imbalance where they couldn't see friends. They were just so busy all the time that they had to do something. And by taking the time to think about, okay, well, how do we do customer service well, and how can we document that for someone else? They were able to hand things off and regain their time. It was true with Laszlo Nadler, who's in the opening chapter. He runs Tools for Wisdom, which is a company that sells planners, day books on Amazon. And he said he uses video to document his processes so he can hand things off. I think it's so important. Process is one of those things that a lot of us find boring. We don't want to sit down and write down how we do things, but that investment of time on the front end is what then gives you the time to actually go to the gym and do the CrossFit later, right? instead of sitting in your office trapped there because you can't finish your work.
Absolutely. So, okay. So interestingly enough, that was one of my questions. And so you hit one of the things, but my question is this, what do you see as some of the obstacles that keep these one person businesses kind of stuck and you know, from achieving the $1 million mark or even the $500,000 mark? Talk about this. I mean, you talked about the perfectionist. She had to do it all, and she had to finally break through that. Did you find anything else that holds people back?
Yes. And one thing that has come up a lot when I've done the panel discussions is people will come up to me afterward, and they feel like they need someone else's go-ahead or support to keep growing their business, or even to start a business in the first place. So they may, for instance, feel like they don't have access to capital and therefore they can't start the business, or they can't quit their job because they don't know how they're going to provide health insurance. And they're kind of waiting almost for someone else to step in and help them. And what I saw with these businesses is it really takes a lot of courage to take the leap to start or grow a business. If you don't take the leap on your own in the beginning somehow, then it's hard to win other people's support to get behind you and help later. So that what I found is they just went ahead and did things. We had a panel at the 92nd Street Y with some of the businesses that ultimately went on to scale about a week ago. And the founders of Brook Linen, it's a sheets company in Brooklyn, New York. And it's a married couple that runs it. They didn't have startup capital in the beginning, so they thought, okay, how are we going to do this? And they went to his brothers, put in some money in the beginning, Then they did a Kickstarter campaign where they pre-sold the sheets to people. And then later they raised venture capital, but having done those other things, like the Kickstarter was very persuasive to the venture capital firm because it showed there was an audience. They knew exactly how many sheets they had already sold, which then tells the venture capitalists that they back the business. They're not going to lose their investment. So they had to take some big leaps of faith to do this. And a lot of the businesses wound up doing it on the side in the beginning. So they did have to sort of juggle things to do this on their own resources. But that's the number one thing I would say is don't wait for someone else to give you the green light to do things. You've got to be resourceful. And no matter what it is, figure out how to do things on your own. You might have to ask 100 people till you get to the answer, you know, how do I find the I promote you in my industry or whatever is holding you back. But giving other people ownership of the progress in your business is what will hold people back. It's hard because I think we don't get a lot of entrepreneurship education in our society. It's really not taught in schools until the college level. And many people are not exposed to entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial thinking. So a lot of times we're trained to wait for an authority figure to tell us it's okay to move ahead with something as in a traditional career. You wait for your boss to tell you, okay, you're ready for the promotion. There's no one to do that for you in a business. So you have to be a little bit bold sometimes and get outside of your comfort zone and just say, you know what, I'm going to somehow find a way to get the $5,000 I need to do this next thing in the business. Maybe I need to buy inventory, or I'm just going to save up all year myself. I'm not going to wait for an investor to come along, because they may not come along until they see that I'm already selling things. That's a roadblock.
Elaine, so since we're running short on time, I wanted to ask you this real quick. From everything that you've learned, not only through the book, and by the way, I want to promo the book real quick. The book again is The $1 Million One Person Business, The $1 Million One Person Business, available at Amazon or wherever your favorite books are bought. So what advice would you give someone who is thinking about maybe leaving their job and would like to start a business around, maybe a hobby or a passion? Talk about this.
I would do a small experiment to see if there's a market for what you want to sell. Let's assume you do have an idea, because sometimes the idea stage takes a while, but you've noticed something in your business that there's a gap in the marketplace. Then I would say figure out some way to create some version of what you plan to sell. This isn't that hard if it's a professional service. It might be something you already do. Find a place to market it. Maybe if it is a professional service, you might put it up on Freelancer, Upwork, People Per Hour, one of the platforms. If it's a product, what you can do is order very small batches from a manufacturer. And the book goes into a little bit of detail about how to do that. But you could put it up on Amazon, just a small amount, see if people order it, and then build on that. What I found with a lot of these entrepreneurs is they found a way to take some of the risk out of the equation by testing things on a very small scale and then stepping on the gas when they had some proof of concept. Sometimes they tried things that didn't work, by the way, and then they just moved on. They pivoted and they treated it as part of their own education. It doesn't mean you're a loser if your first idea doesn't work. You might have to try five until you find the one that works, but the experiments really help.
Well, let me tell you, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. That to me is one of the best things, one of the best advice that anybody here listening, if you're thinking about starting a business or starting a new business or launching a product or something, you're adding maybe an extension to your existing business, you have to test the market. I cannot emphasize this enough. So I'm so happy that you said that. And I want to give somebody, give the audience an example. I had a client who had already spent like $30,000 on their website. They were going to try to make a website to compete with Teachable and Udemy and stuff like that. And he had a different twist on it. And I asked him, I said, have you tested any of this? Do you know if they're going to be receptive? Is this twist that you're adding to this going to be disruptive enough? And so he had not done any research. So what we did is we stopped and stopped what he was doing, and we started doing research. We put a couple of focus groups together. We did some online surveys, and we got back a lot of negative feedback. People who, you know, basically the majority of people didn't think the concept was that good. It wasn't engaged. You know, the difference that he was adding was not received well. And so he ended up stopping, you know, again, he had already invested like 30 or 40 grand. So he ended up stopping what he was doing and went in a different direction. It's so critically important.
That's a great story because, yeah, people do lose quite a bit of money by getting in too deep. And what he could have done is just put up a rudimentary website, done some A-B testing, which I explain in the book. It's a way of seeing what people are responding to. It's not that hard. There are automated programs now that you can use if you don't know how to do it on your own. It would have saved thousands of dollars. That's a great story, but the knowledge that he gained could ultimately be worth a lot to him. So it's not a total loss either. If he takes it and then says, you know what, I learned a lot from that. I'm going to come up with an even better site than those two competitors.
Right. And so I agree with you. Just, you know, you need to learn and study the data and see how you can apply it. But I think it's, you know, definitely what a great way to start your business is test the waters. You know, one of the great things available to us today that was not available, back in the day was, you know, we have these 3D printers. And so these 3D printers are getting so sophisticated. And there are companies out there where instead of you buying a $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 printer, you can actually take your idea or whatever your schematic to the 3D printer shop. They'll produce the widget for you, and you know they charge you a per widget charge, but that might be more economical than investing in a laser printer yourself. I'm sorry, not a laser printer, a 3D printer yourself. But my point being is, instead of manufacturing, you know, 100 widgets, you manufacture 10 or even 5 and see what the responses are. See if if people like it enough to invest or buy or whatever. So I love this idea that, you know, this concept of testing the waters, do a small sampling, see what kind of feedback you get. All right. Last but not least, if somebody wants to get a hold of you or buy your book, Where do they go?
I would love to hear from them, Bert. I love hearing from entrepreneurs and future entrepreneurs. They can go to themilliondollaronepersonbusiness.com. The same is the title of the book, all written out in words, no numbers. And there's a contact me box on that site where I do answer my mail. So feel free to write to me, or I'm on Twitter under my first and last name, Elaine Pofeld, which is in the show notes. Or on LinkedIn, and I welcome you to follow me and get in touch. I truly love hearing from people who have read the book or plan to read it or are just thinking about starting a business.
I love it. Is it themilliondollaronepersonbusiness.com?
That's right, yes.
Okay, I'm going to put that in the show notes as well. And you guys can reach out to Elaine and see what else, you know, how you can reach out to Elaine. Elaine, as I mentioned, is a contributing writer for multiple media outlets. And so she may be looking for a story. She'd love to hear back your feedback on the book. If you haven't bought the book, you can go to themilliondollaronepersonbusiness.com, get the book there. And basically learn how to make great money, work the way you like, and have the life you want. And Elaine, it's been so much fun catching up with you. It's been a long time, and I'm so excited about your book.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, Bert. It's been so great to talk with you, and what an honor to be on the show. Thank you so much.
You bet. We'll talk to you later. Good stuff. Thanks. There from my dear friend, Elaine Pofeld. TheMillionDollarOnePersonBusiness.com. The Million Dollar One Person Business is the name of the book, available at that website or wherever Amazon or wherever or on Amazon. I'm having my lips must be wearing out or something. If you're not familiar with Elaine, all I can say is if you Google her name, Elaine, P-O-F-E-L-D-T, And you can see she's all over the Google sphere there. She mentioned that she is on Twitter as well, and that's on the, in the show notes. And ladies and gentlemen, please, let's help as many people as we can. Let's share this episode with everyone you know. It's really about helping other people. I always appreciate your support. I appreciate all the feedback that I get. And remember, my friends, as always, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.